This is Mile High.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, coming to you from an altitude of 5,280 feet. And thank you for listening to, downloading, streaming, watching the Mile High Podcast and whatever channel you do. And if you are enjoying our episodes, I highly recommend to hit subscribe, whether it be in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever way you tune into them. We really enjoy bringing you incredible content relative to chiropractic to fuel you and your team. And speaking of that, absolutely dial in, being at Mile High number 6, August 16th to 19th. If you have not gotten registration done, do it now, www.milehighchiro.org. We look forward to seeing you there and welcoming you home to Mile High. Today, I am so thrilled for this podcast episode with Dr. Amy Haas, who right now is sporting a Beastie Boys shirt, and before we came on, was rocking out to the Beastie Boys, which I just so appreciate so much. She's a New England native who practices in Nashua, which is in New Hampshire. She has a bachelor's, master's, and PhD in biochemistry, and completed a postdoctoral fellowship in the Department of Pathology at Harvard Medical School in Boston, and accepted a position as a research scientist, and is a chiropractor, practicing practitioner. She's going to be speaking at Mile High. She's published papers, heart rate variability, on heart rate variability in chiropractic, and practices every day like you and I. And I'm so excited to dive into some chiropractic philosophy, science, principles, and art with her. We're going to have a lot of fun. And welcome to the episode, Dr. Amy Haas.
Thank you very much for inviting me to do this. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
You know, every time I converse with you, I have so much fun. Like last time when you were out at Mile High, because I think you've been there, is it 2 years in a row or three now? I don't remember.
This will be the third
coming up. And we went to have coffee, and I always have a great time talking with you. And I love the pictures that you took. Just, you know, you did the wise thing, which is you came out to Mile High and got a little bit of time to do some sightseeing and hiking, which is what I always, Colorado is so beautiful, you know, don't waste the trip, make sure you do that. I cannot recommend it enough, and I was glad you took us up on that idea. So, first of all, let's help people get to know you a little bit better. There's a very sciencey research background. How did you find your way into the chiropractic world and deciding this is what you want to do as a career and in helping people?
Boy, that's actually a pretty big question. I'll give you some of the bullet points on that.
That's fine. Bullet points work.
So when I was in my teens and going into my 20s, I was definitely a science-based person. I loved research, experimenting, learning. Biochemistry was a natural fit for me. I love systems biology. And the type of biochemistry that I did is actually the kind that everybody else hates.
Right.
It's metabolic biochemistry, all the charts and how they connect. And
yes.
That's my wheelhouse. I love that. Thinking about how the whole big picture fits together, which, of course, is what I bring to chiropractic.
Mm-hmm.
So as a scientist, I had a back injury, which is how many people get into chiropractic at first.
Right.
And I was at first very, very resistant to chiropractic care, to the tune where someone was, I'll use the word nagging me, for probably 4 months and saying, you really need to see my chiropractor. And my response was very resistant at the time. Finally went in, and he changed my world. Absolutely showed me a new possibility that I had no idea, and that was just the start. At that time, I was having some difficulty with my career path. I was not resonating with where I really truly needed to go in either academic science or in industry pharma. It just wasn't where I wanted to be, and I didn't know where I wanted to be. So after about a month and a half of being under corrective-based, subluxation-based chiropractic care, I was actually, you'll get a kick out of this, I was actually sitting at a bar in Somerville, Mass. Called the Joshua Tree in Davis Square, and I'm sitting there having a harpoon ale, waiting for a friend of mine to come by. We were watching game 6 of 7. It might have been game 7, the New York Yankees versus the Red Sox.
Oh, boy. Just,
you know, classic Red Sox. And I'm sitting there. I'd had a beer, so my brain was a little bit open to ideas. All of a sudden, this thought rises up in my head, and the thought is hilarious in retrospect. Amy, why are you not thinking about becoming a chiropractor? And it took me by surprise. I was like, because I'm a scientist, and that's anti-scientific. And then I'm like, Amy, think about that statement very And all of a sudden, my brain started to shift about this new possibility.
Uh-huh.
And it's been a growth experience ever since. As you know, the layers and the layers and layers of understanding, and I'm still midway through that process of really grasping what it is that we have in our hands with chiropractic.
Mm-hmm.
And with what I know right now, which is nothing compared to what many people deeply understand, I'm blown away every day, honestly, how everything dovetails together, fits together, and is really in keeping with biology, with neuroanatomy, with neuroscience, and the natural order. It's been a process.
Well, you know, what you said brought something to mind to me. I have been in chiropractic as a practitioner for over 20 years, and I still learn stuff every day, as you just kind of described. And that's why when I put together Mile High, I have a big focus of making sure there's real content for people, because I feel like people could never stop growing in chiropractic. And why waste time getting continuing education credits or going to programs and things that have nothing to do with subluxation when there's such a depth in there, from philosophy to science to art to business? And running an office that, like, we all need to grow in, and people we know get so much less of it in school than would be ideal. So, you know, it's to create that resource, and I'm grateful you're going to be a resource for that, you know, this year for people, because I think I saw you do an incredible presentation on heart rate variability and subluxation at Scott Garber's Berkshire's event. Which was, it was amazing, and I was so grateful for that. So I'm really grateful for you to share this year. And so let's go into that area. You've done work with heart rate variability. Can you say something about the work you've done and where, why you think heart rate variability is important in chiropractic?
I would love to. I was having a conversation with Dave Fletcher about this last week in preparation for the continuing ed at the Alliance of New Mexico Chiropractors. And he was reminding me, helping to recenter me on some things that are really important to all of us. One of the things he brought up was that heart rate variability is just such a unique opportunity for us as chiropractors. We could not choose a stronger way to tell the chiropractic story. And when we think about what it means, what the science behind it says, how it integrates into our clients, into our philosophy, it is truly a unique opportunity that I think we are just beginning to scratch the surface of how we can really bring something unique to the world. And we're it. We are at the forefront of practitioners, healthcare practitioners, who can truly provide salutogenesis in a measurable way. We're in. I wish more people knew that, and that's what I'm hoping to share and at Mile High, and inspire people to dig deeper and learn more about this stuff.
And in that, you said something really important about measuring, which is, sadly, so few practitioners even do any kind of measuring or any kind of outcomes for the care they're providing. And I like to see more people do any outcome or reassessments and up their game in that. And this is such an ideal, such a simple one, and such a great way to help people connect the nerve system with the rest of their body and think beyond their spine has to do with their back. expand that vision. So with that, tell us a little bit about the research that you have done.
Okay. I would say HRV is simple, but it is also so profound. And when I started with heart rate variability, I was simply excited because I love objective outcome measures. As a scientist, I want to see before and after the adjustment what has changed. That's what feeds my brain, and that's what works for me in terms of learning more about chiropractic. So when HRV hit my radar, I went, huh, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
I started to read more about it because, of course, being me, I'm going to go look in PubMed and look, how does this apply to other areas? What about cancer biology? What about adaptability? What about athletic biology? And all these things. And all of a sudden, I started to recognize this is a huge, huge field.
Right.
That people with, and I started to understand that people with higher heart rate variability really do have more of a tendency to be towards a health trajectory, higher within limits, and there's a caveat to that. Mm-hmm. Whereas people with lower or reduced heart rate variability have not only a correlation with worsened health prognosis, it's actually predictive of all-cause mortality. That's hugely powerful.
Right.
If you have something when it's low, it's bad, it predicts all-cause mortality. When it's healthy and higher, but not above a certain limit, it predicts good athletic performance and really adaptability and resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And right there, we've told the chiropractic story. So HRV presents us an opportunity to dovetail that into our philosophy and present it to people as an option they may not have known about before in a way that is biologically plausible but congruent with our philosophy. And I think that's something really potentially powerful. So when I started looking at research with HRV, as a scientist, I wanted to see what is the immediate response in HRV to a specific chiropractic adjustment to correct vertebral subluxation. What is the immediate response? And then what is the response of a person's baseline HRV over time, which is something very similar to what you did.
Right.
So two brains were thinking down the same pathway here. And I found interesting results with both. One, right directly after an adjustment. Now, I don't know for sure whether this is because of my technique or because of biology. The results were not always predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, struck my brain as very interesting, because the results of the adjustment are not always predictable. Because in the bigger picture, who's in control of what the adjustment does in the body? I'm not.
Right.
The body, innate intelligence, does what it sees fit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing an immediate impact on heart rate variability, which again is a reflection of adaptability and resilience. We're seeing an immediate impact on that with the adjustment, which makes my brain go, that's stinking cool as hell.
Well, and one of the things there with outcome assessments, and I, since I've practiced, have used a whole range of outcome assessments, and what I find, sadly, in a lot of the chiropractic practitioner population is a lack of accountability. And, like, I started to use instrumentation tool X, Y, Z, whatever it was, I didn't see a change, so I stopped using it. Which is a lack of accountability versus what you said, like I couldn't always predict it. But as a profession, having continuous measures of outcomes in a wide range of areas, and then we can see what approaches, as Matthew McCoy, we have a responsibility as a profession to go towards those approaches that get the greatest outcomes and measure that we're doing that. And we haven't done our homework in that. So to see people like you take those steps and others is in whatever field, and then acknowledge, like that's what happened with Network. There's been many times Network with different research agendas where we got certain information, then we altered the technique to go towards what was getting a better result. Like that's the purpose of what you're supposed to be doing with research, not proving what you think you know. Right? Sadly, that's what chiropractors often think research is supposed to do, versus that, you know, you find out new things and you go into new ground. And you also said two key words that I love. You said that it's predictive. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. That's a powerful term, that this is predictive of something in a person's life is huge, because not many things necessarily are. And number two, that it change, like trajectory, that if this changes, trajectory of a person's life changes. And I say that all the time to patients, that, you know, I'm not taking care of you to make you feel better. If I'm going to spend time with you and my time's of value, I want to see the trajectory of your life change. If you're not interested in the trajectory of your life changing, you probably don't want to be here. Like that's the level that I want to interact with someone at.
Yes. I could not agree with any of those statements. Goodness gracious. So, adaptability.
Right.
Is at the center of this. And one thing that we as a profession, when we're looking at HRV, we need to consider is, are we looking at HRV as I'm fixing HRV? Or I'm using HRV to assess a reflection of how well the body is regulating itself.
Exactly.
So that's something that's a distinct difference. We need to think about that in a philosophical context and how we present that.
Right.
Because we are, strictly speaking, improving heart rate variability. We have to be very careful about that. That is cardiology.
Yep, exactly. And that's the same thing with many other outcomes. If you switch your objective, for example, to change the x-ray versus seeing the x-ray as a reflection of what the body's changed, it's a completely different thing because your tools change. And I absolutely agree. And that's why, you know, we want to look at those indicators that are reflective of presence of subluxation. As we address subluxation, do those indicators alter versus my objective is to change the indicator? Because if my objective is to change the indicator, then there's all kinds of ways to do it, which may not be a chiropractic application. And it's very good for people to be clear about that, because your objective really can change everything.
Absolutely. One of the things you brought up a minute ago was about statistical prediction of all-cause mortality with heart rate variability and what a course of chiropractic care can do with that. Mm-hmm. This is something that people before us have noticed for decades, since the beginning of chiropractic, that people under regular care seem to be healthier, more resilient, and can better handle the stressors that life throws at us.
Mm-hmm. So
if we look at HRV as a reflection of that, the paper that I just put out is a very different viewpoint on that. It has multiple data points per person, six different people, that shows not just where they are at one particular point in time, but an actual trajectory.
Right.
And what I found interesting about those, there's a couple of things I found interesting. As it is with any case series, I chose six that were most representative of the cases I was looking at. But there were more cases behind the scenes that had some complications due to use of statins, SSRIs, which you can't interpret HRV when you have drugs on board. There's a different story there. There were a couple of cases where the HRV did not change.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, those people actually had, two of those people actually had a pathology going on behind the scenes.
Mm.
The most interesting thing to me as a scientist, I look at this with a bigger perspective. In 3 years, 3 years of following people's HRV, time point by time point by time point, I saw some fluctuation, I saw steady, I saw upwards, I never saw downwards trajectory. That fascinated me.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinated me. So if we look at that in the context of people with lower HRV having a statistical predilection towards all-cause mortality, if you alter, well, if the body alters that HRV, and so which is reflective of better adaptation and resilience, then what you've really done is you have quantitatively changed a person's health trajectory.
Right.
And that's where the power of this is. This is pointing someone in a different direction.
Yep. And I'll tell you, it's really important to what you said about that when their HRV was not changing. In my time, and I use thermography, electromyography, HRV, I use x-ray, there's been a handful of people less than five, I think it's three, where it was either their EMG or thermography didn't change.
Yep.
And or was not changing. And I upped the frequency of how often I was assessing it because I said, this is odd, so I'm going to reassess it more frequently to see what's going on. And it still wasn't changing. And it turned out they had another pathology going on that when they went to a practitioner, you know, another health field to get it checked out, it was discovered, which I was fascinated. It's the only time in 20 years taking care of it. It's like three people. I was like, thermography reading didn't change, and I couldn't figure out why, and that was why.
That fascinates me because it literally means their body is stuck in a pattern.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And what's corrective care designed to do is to interrupt that pattern so that the body can create a new one and restore freedom.
And it means also that as a practitioner, you have a clinical responsibility that if something's not changing, to, you know, tell the patient that versus hide it because you don't want to look bad because the results aren't in your favor. Right.
Right.
So,
right.
And that's again called this word that sometimes is a bad word to people, accountability.
Doing right by the person. Yeah.
Right, right. You're a healthcare provider. So, now here's the thing that I want to mention. You did a very fascinating Facebook post, social media post, about a little experiment you did in your office with asking people about chiropractic. Can you elucidate that? Because I think this will be very entertaining for our listeners and inspiring.
It was pretty fun. In the conference in New Mexico this past weekend, there was some discussion about words, the use of words, lexicon, ontology. Those words are kind of floating around in our profession about the importance of how we communicate chiropractic to our patients, therefore how they communicate chiropractic to their circles, therefore how we are represented outside of our circles. And so the words that we use with our patients will be reflected back to us as well as carried forward to their crowd to represent us.
Yep.
So what I chose to do was I kind of did a check-in on myself to see what words patients were using. And I asked my patients, if you were to use one or two words to describe to you what is the product of the chiropractic adjustment to you, what would those words be? They're literally designing a question to have words reflected back at me. This is what they associate with chiropractic. So, you know, the words that I think we would not want as much to hear would be chiropractic to me means crack, pop, I feel better, manipulated.
Right.
So, I got a little bit of that in here. I'm just going to go ahead and read you my printout.
Read it, because people are going to love it.
Totally fun. Yep. I put this up on my whiteboard, and I encourage any of you to do this. So stinking fun. And then all of your patients get involved, and they see what each other is thinking. And it reinforces the tribe, you know, that we are a people who think in one common terms. This has been a powerful exercise, actually. I didn't even anticipate how cool this would be.
So to be clear on it for the people that are listening, the question you asked was?
If I asked my patients.
Right.
If you were to describe to me in one or two words, what is the product of the chiropractic adjustment to you?
Right.
The words that came back at me.
Okay, so now the answers are, okay, drum roll it.
Continuity. Synapsing. So I actually said that. I work with nerds.
Yeah.
Cleared. A quote. I feel it in my brain. Mind clearing. Freeing. Easier to breathe. Positive. Optimistic. Relaxing. Relief. Amazing. Enabling. Fun. Life. Life choices and freedom. Resetting to freedom, balancing, increased energy, awesome, empowering, enlightening, energized, stronger, that's one of my favorites, structural integrity via suspension bridge, somebody's talking to me, conscious awakening, another one of my favorites, realigns your life, shifts your belief system, life-changing, spinal health, integrated, It's the reset button. Somebody else has been listening to me. Transformative, health enhancing. And the next one, I have four more after that, but I'm going to take a pause here. The next one kind of blew my mind. Someone, as I'm asking her this question, she just said to me, you know, the first time you held my head in your hands, I was palpating her atlas. She said the thoughts that came to her mind were, I'm going to live. I was like, wow. How do you respond to that?
Right.
We have this trust. Mm-hmm. We have this opportunity in our hands to really change someone's life. But they get it.
Right.
To a very deep level. Right. This was the end of her assessment. We've done her x-rays, her scans. She and I have been talking about subluxation, about, you know, what's been going on in her body. And that was her response.
Yep.
That is a reflection.
That's amazing.
Oh, my God. Of things I would have never had happen in my scientific career at the lab bench.
Well, and I got to tell you, when I listen to those terms, first of all, that's beautiful, and kudos to you for being a good educator, an outstanding educator of your practice members, right? And that's our job, is help them reposition what healthcare means, what chiropractic means, what the adjustment means from whatever they've learned in the culture, right? So yeah. It's a big part of our job. So one, kudos to you for doing a great job of doing that. As I heard that, what I heard was, this is the difference between the experience of a manipulation and an adjustment. If someone's having a manipulation, they're going to say, back pain went away, I have less headaches, my shoulder moves, whatever, right? When you're really having an adjustment that resets, we'll use that word, the nervous system, you know, it changes the integrity of the nervous system, all interrupts the patterns of the nervous system, you get those kinds of responses, you know?
Yeah, that's a big, big, big responsibility.
Right, right. And that's huge. And so tremendous to hear that. And that's so much fun. Now, you've come out to Mile High twice. You're going to be on stage. One cool thing to notice, if that I want to make sure people hear, you actually, in addition to me hearing you speak at, before I say this, what have you enjoyed about attending Mile High? And then I'll say what I was going to say.
Ooh, the first Mile High, I was there. I just saw the collection of speakers and I went, this is very unusual. This is someone bringing together, a lot like what Scott Garber does, a lot of different speakers from different viewpoints to really expand your horizons. And that's why I wanted to come back. And then last year was fantastic as well. The speakers were great. And I got to say, I love listening to Donnie Epstein. Last year, it feeds my brain. And
yeah.
this is such an exploration for me. Having had my prior career and then this shift, and then this new world opening up to me and just continuing to learn what's possible and what are the bigger implications of what we're looking at. So having the opportunity to listen to Patch and Tempo, Johnny Epstein, and integrate those into my thought process was just inestimable. So one of the reasons I'm looking forward to coming back this year, and I'm very honored to be participating in that.
Well, and what you just said is what people often say, and it's part of what I want to create a program that I'd want to go to, which has a little bit of a certain conscious thought of content that's in it that I feel fed and rewarded to, and that I would want to take my team to, that I want my practice, my team members to be at, to learn more about chiropractic. Like, how I created this is how I think, and what would I want to be at? Last year was the first year we did the speaker entries. Right? Because honestly, I get so many people asking me to speak, which is fine, which is great. And
sure.
And sometimes that really helps me pick people, you know. But yet some people ask me, I said, well, what if we just did speaker entries? And I really got nervous about it because I thought, well, if we do this, are people going to think people don't want to speak at Mile High? You know, like, or some kind of thing like that. But it was the opposite. But I thought, yeah, I would do that. And you put in a speaker entry, which was outstanding. And I wanted to give you more time than what the people that were entering the contest, if we want to call it that, would get. I want you to get a whole continuing education hour, because I think the content is so valuable. I wouldn't want to give you less than that. So by doing that, you in a way won, because you're speaking this year. You know, so I want people, what would you say to people that were like, oh, I don't know if I want to submit an entry or something like that, that might want to speak?
Do it. It's gracious. If you have something that you want to share with the profession, then what better way than to set things in motion? Action yields results, whether it's immediately what you think it's going to be or whether it may be down the line. What I loved about that, the contest, the idea of the contest, was bringing new perspectives and new ideas onto the chiropractic stage. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, and it was so fun. Rhea did great last year, Rhea Kamarik, and Francisco Torelli. It was just incredibly fun. I was a student speaker, and
Cool. Something new. Yes, absolutely. People should just take that action step and move forward and push yourself out of your comfort zone and just say, release attachment to outcome and literally just say, okay, I'm thinking of something bigger now, and this is the step I'm going to take towards giving back to my profession.
Awesome. And so let's think a little bit bigger. I'm gonna go a little expansive question here, and I know you can handle it. So world according to Amy, right? So what would you like to see happen in chiropractic, whether it be research or professional or political or practical? What would you like to see us move forward towards?
I'm going to give you an answer you're not going to expect.
That's okay. Those are fun.
So, keeping in mind that you see my philosophy, you see where I'm noticing how things dovetail at the greater significance. So, what I would really deeply like to see is experimental assessment of how the specific chiropractic adjustment delivered to correct vertebral subluxation affects function, neurophysiological function, in the vagus nerve.
Wow, cool.
If we could band together, I can't do that experiment, but I know there are people who can.
Mm-hmm.
If we could show that the specific chiropractic adjustment modulates vagus activity, we've got a story to tell the whole world that no one is going to be able to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
We know this clinically. We know this practically. We know this philosophically. Show me the data.
Yes. You know, and this is why we're big supporters through Mile High of Research. That's why we've, highlighted the Foundation for Vertebral Subluxation Research last year.
Yes.
I think Matt McCoy and crew, Christy Kwan, they do an incredible job. And they're underfunded, undersupported, and underappreciated for what they do and the importance that it is, which is along the lines exactly what you just said. And that's why this year we're highlighting the Australian Spinal Research Foundation. I mean, we can't have enough people. I mean, we have nowhere near enough people putting their minds on research. And the future of our profession hinges, I think, on a couple things. One, our educational system, which is a whole nother story. Two, our students, who's in school now and what they do in the future, right? And three, research. What we do with research is going to be vital, because we have to have evidence for what we do at a level that's so much beyond what we have. I appreciate and feel very certain about what we do as chiropractors, but we have to publish more, by far.
We have to show concrete biological plausibility, because if you remember a couple of minutes ago, I was talking about my own resistance as a scientist to come into the chiropractic care paradigm. So this past weekend in New Mexico, Sean Dill said something that really has my brain going. He was talking about the utilization rates of chiropractic, which we know are abysmal, which is amazing given the value that this profession brings to the world.
Right.
It's, then there's the question of that maybe 5%, 5 to 10% of the U.S. population that actually sees a chiropractor, maybe 5% on a regular basis. How many people show up into any of our offices that are from another office versus how many fresh people from a new perspective? What are we doing to attract the attention of that 90% of the population that has never seen a chiropractor? May have inaccurate knowledge like I did.
Right.
Chiropractic is. What can we do to share the chiropractic story with them in a way that is consistent with our philosophy, not about back pain, not about manipulation, about this is as measured by maybe intermediate, maybe vagus nerve function. We've got a couple of lines going there.
Right.
But if to do that, that if we were to have research that supports the contention that the chiropractic adjustment modulates vagus nerve function, concrete evidence, that changes the entire political landscape of the profession. Because every single person who has said, nope, chiropractic is limited to back pain and neck pain for 12 visits, you've just given them to the contrary. But that is only a starting point, because the secondary, the tertiary, quaternary questions, okay, it modulates the activity. Then there's the bigger questions of what is the most effective approach, and how can we, I'm going to say something people are going to hate me for, how can we measure which adjustment is best for any given person at any given time? What is going to deliver the maximal results and specificity per person? How can we measure that?
Right. Well, you know, absolutely, and I agree, and that requires a certain level of maturity as a profession, right, which not always have we displayed. So I'll tell you something interesting, and I remember this from the perspective of someone in prerequisites, okay, which is I was having a conversation with my dad, with Donald Epstein, and I said, you know, to him at that time, so we're talking 25 years ago or 23 years ago, that kind of range.
Let me cue up the Beastie Boys.
It was about the time of that picture you saw. So I was in that range. And I said to him, I said, okay, so what do you think would be the ideal chiropractic setting for people to get care? And this is his perspective then, you know, and me asking that question as someone who might be going to chiropractic school, maybe, right? And he said to me, the ideal situation would be that someone goes in, is getting care, and then at each different point of care, the practitioner would refer them to someone who does upper cervical work for what's going on at that point in care, or does Gonstead, or then goes to say someone who's a specialist in Logan or specialist in whatever approach, because at that point in their process of care, they needed to get more specificity of that particular approach at that time.
And understanding different approaches for different people.
Yes.
One of the things that I found most interesting about the HRV research that you did and I did is we use very different approaches, different analysis techniques, and very different approaches to correcting subluxation, and yet we're both seeing improvement in resilience as reflected by HRV.
Isn't that amazing?
Assessment and the subluxation rather than the technique.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Absolutely. Well, I super, one, thank you for taking your time to be on the podcast. I'm thrilled for our audience at Mile High to get to hear the information that you share at Mile High, because I know it'll help them have more certainty. Last year, one of the people said to me, you know, I love the philosophy sessions. You know, there's the science sessions and I have trouble with it, because you can tell where different people's headspace are, right? I mean, some people, the science sessions are bigger. But I think you need all of that, because you really need to have more certainty as a practitioner in what you communicate, and science and research helps you, as it helps your staff with that. It helps everybody with that. So I really, really excited for the people attending to get to hear you. And I'm also so grateful for your participation as an attendee of Mile High all these years. And keep rocking the shirt. So thank you, and we'll have some information. I'll put some links into this of your past articles so people can get to the abstract. I'll put that in the post that goes along with this, so people that can go to the site and see that, which will help. We look forward to seeing you. I'll see you in the Berkshires, right? And then I'll see you at Mile High August 16th to 19th. If you haven't registered, do that, www.milehighchiro.org. It is going to rock this year. And you know, take the time and make a trip out of it. You know, make a vacation. Just get an extra couple hours or day to enjoy your life a little bit and enjoy the Rockies, because it's totally worth the extra time. So thank you again for all you're doing for chiropractic, Dr. Amy.
You're welcome.
welcome, and thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm honored to share, and I hope Mile High that I can inspire people and circles.
I know you will. So, and we're going to sign off. And when you're listening to this, hit the subscribe button. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you around the chiropractic world. Thank you for listening to the Mile High Podcast. Like our page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/milehighchiro.